Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land on which we live. I'm pleased to welcome Jo Nemeth today. Jo was recommended to me by Antimos, who you might remember we had on a few weeks ago, to chat about, we had him chatting about what he's learned about living and connecting with the community despite sleeping rough. Jo has been living without money for 12 years, which is a radical project to do in such a highly monetized economy. And she's been intentionally reducing her consumption for reasons I think everyone listening to this show would understand. So I won't go through them all. I'll let Jo talk about that as we start talking. So Jo, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Anne.
And I wonder, would you mind telling your whole life story? I don't just mean from the moment when you started thinking, I'm just going to live without money. But was there even back in your childhood an inkling of that kind of thinking? What's in you that started you off on that?
Okay, that's a big question.
I know, I thought I'd just start with a big one.
That's fine, yeah, we might as well throw ourselves in. I was raised in the country. My parents had cattle properties in Queensland. So I was raised on the land in, and I used to play with my sister. We'd climb trees and round up cattle, ride horses. So there was that connection to land in so far as we could, like not being original peoples from that land. And so that was really, I think that's really informed my decisions. My parents were always very frugal. My mother is the most frugal person that I know that I've ever met. So I learned up with that kind of, I was raised with that kind of frugality in mind. And my dad has always just used what was available to build and make things and fix things. So he's a real kind of bodger, I call him. He bodges.
Bodger.
He bodges things better than anyone I've ever met.
Is that a Queensland word,
Jo? Oh, you don't know that word?
Bodger? No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's obvious what it means, but.
Yeah, no, it just means to fix things with, it's a kind of dodgy fixing.
Dodgy, bodgy.
With whatever you have around you, you kind of just throw a bit of this in and a bit of that in. MacGyver.
Tie it up with wire.
Yeah. But he does that very well. And so I was raised like that, but I was also raised Catholic. And I went to a Catholic primary school. And I think that the main message that I came up with, like Catholicism is full of faults, don't even get me started, and I'm no longer Catholic, but the main message that I took away from that was loving others as you would have them love you, like treat others the way you would have them treat you. That message of love has stayed with me and always been very strong for me. At one point I did want to be a nun when I was about 10 or 11. I thought, oh, I'd love to be a nun, but I realized looking back now that I think that was more about being cloistered with a group of women growing food together and stuff. So there was always kind of that longing to be in that kind of environment, in a communal environment where you're doing things together, especially around food and the land. So I guess that's always been strong in me. I've never been a huge consumer since then, but, you know, I've never had a lot of money, I suppose, as well. So when I had money, I didn't have enough to really, I only just barely had enough to scrape by for most of my adult life. So giving up money wasn't a huge thing. It might be for people who actually have enough money to live on comfortably.
Yeah, you didn't have to get rid of your whole share portfolio or anything.
No. No.
Well, that tells the story very well. So you're probably not finished, though. Take us right up to when you decided to make this a sort of a project.
Yeah, so then I was, I guess, so I travelled overseas when I was in my early 20s. I met a very a woman, a German woman who lived in Ireland where I woofed for a little while. And she was not the nicest woman in the world. We had a strained relationship, but she was incredibly inspiring. She inspired me to get into natural therapies. I came back and I studied herbal medicine, and I think that that took me down a path of kind of looking at the world around me through an alternative lens. And so from then I kind of looked at the political world, the economic world around me through a sort of more alternative lens from the mainstream things that I was being told. And then from there, I guess I started to read more, educated myself more, and right up until it was around the point where I decided to live without money, about 2014, that happened. So just prior to that, I had been reading online so many things about the impacts of my buying choices, like the things that I was buying, like fish, tuna cans, even baked beans and cans of tomatoes, shoes or new shoes, new clothes, petrol, obviously, fossil fuels. So all of those things, I was kind of looking into them in greater depth, and I was just becoming more and more frustrated, saddened, guilt-ridden about the damage that I could see that all of those things were doing to other people. And with that childhood message of doing unto others as you would have them do unto you, I was like, oh no, like this is, it's not that I can make much difference myself, but the fact is that I was complicit. I was complicit in these systems that I was realizing more and more were violent and harmful and devastating, not only to human beings and creatures, but well, not only to human beings, but to creatures and ecosystems and oceans and forests. And your listeners know all of this. So all of those things were being damaged and destroyed through, through things that I was doing. I was complicit, and I still am to some extent, but I've reduced my complicity significantly.
Well, yeah, I think that's what distinguishes you from a lot of us. We all know we're complicit, but we just live with the guilt and kind of do the best we can. And we have got to get to that balance, don't we, of we are part of nature and we are going to have an impact on it. We're allowed to take from the world as well as give, but obviously in the West we're taking much, much, much more than the world can sustain.
And I think that other beings in nature will give back as well, give back as much as they take generally. Like that's the balance of nature, is it's give and take, and we are taking way more than we're giving. And I understand that kind of guilt, obviously, because I was living in it, and I still live in it to a certain extent. And it's a horrible, horrible place to be. That's what led me to this, living like this, because for me this was a way out to a certain extent. And I feel incredibly lucky to have found this path and privileged to be able to take this path. I don't expect other people to do it, but I just felt like I couldn't really. It's not that I was suicidal, but I just felt like I didn't want to live the rest of my life like that, and I had to find a different way. There might have been other different ways that I could have taken, but that was the one that jumped out to me when I was reading a book one day. I thought, oh, that's my answer.
Was it the Mark Boyle book?
No, it
No.
wasn't. It was a book called it's Greg Forster. Forster wrote oh goodness, it's jumped out of my
Don't
head.
worry, that's all right.
It was written by a guy from down your way, Greg Forster, and he rode his bikes. He and his partner rode their bikes up and down the east coast of Australia, looking at ways that people were living sustainably. And in that book, and I have to go back and read it because I can't remember exactly who they mentioned, but they mentioned somebody who had chosen to live without money. And then I went and found Mark Boyle after that.
So Mark Boyle wrote The Way Home, Tales from a Life Without Technology, and he tried to live a radically simple life in Ireland.
So Mark Boyle, back when I was deciding to do this, he was living in just outside Bristol in England in a caravan on someone's property, living without money. So he lived without money there for 3.5 years, I think. And he wrote two books, one called The Moneyless Man and the second one, The Moneyless Manifesto. And they're the perfect books for someone like me. So I devoured those when I was starting off. And anybody who's interested, yeah, The Moneyless Man and The Moneyless Manifesto, fantastic books. And then he wrote another book called The Drinking Molotov Cocktails with Gandhi. And then his fourth book is the one that you've got there, The Way Home, Living Without Technology, because he then moved back to Ireland where he's from, and he got this little small holding, and that's in this small holding where they live in Galway, County Galway, is a it has a free pub where people can go and live and stay and work and hang out for free.
Is
It's
that
a
under his influence? Because that's really radical.
that's him and another man called Sean Chamberlain, who is, some people may have heard of Sean Chamberlain as well. So really, really influential guys doing some wonderful things in County Galway in Ireland.
I was driving in the rain yesterday along a street in, I think it was Gertrude Street in Fitzroy. I think it was Gertrude Street. And there's a little shop. It looks like a little pop-up shop, and it's got everything $4. It's got coffee $4, soup $4, toasties $4. I'm really feeling that this is getting a bit of traction. Just in the because I've been doing this show for 3 years. And obviously been exploring this stuff for many years before that. And I've noticed just in, it's a matter of months, I've got a feeling there's a real change. Much more talk about the gift economy in much wider circles than normal, than they've been used to, I
Great.
know.
Yeah, great. That's really good. Yeah, that's because that's my, my way of being right now is 100% gift economy. When I had money, and everyone who's listening who has money will be living partially in the gift economy. It's part of our lives always, because we're always giving freely to people that we know, usually friends and family, usually, and sometimes strangers. But then when you choose to give up money, then you live 100% in the gift economy, which is a beautiful way to live. I've just expanded out what I was already doing to make up 100% of my income, in inverted commas. So yeah, it's a fantastic way of being, and it's an ancient way of being. Physical money is only a relatively recent invention, as far as humanity's history goes.
I like that. I like when you say it's an ancient way of being. I
Speaking
always,
of,
sorry, go on.
yeah, speaking of like your $4 place up the road, there are places around that have free shops. There's a free shop not far from us in I think it's in Billy Nudgell, on the way to the Gold Coast from Lismore, where I am. There's the Catholic Worker Movement. Have you heard of the Catholic Worker
No,
Movement?
no.
So that's a branch of Catholicism, the Catholic Workers. And there was a woman, I think, in America called Dorothy Day, who started Catholic Worker Movement houses, free houses. I don't know, maybe even 100 years ago, a long time ago, early last century. And so they're still in existence. And there's some friends of mine who run a Catholic Worker free house called the Dorothy Day House in Brisbane, in Greenslopes in Brisbane. And that's a house where some people who are earning money, they pay the rent on this house, and then they open the house up to anybody, anytime, from anywhere, to come and just be there for free. They don't have to pay anything. There's a little free shop in the front. They give them food, meals, a bed to sleep on. It's just such a beautiful living example of loving your neighbor,
It's an example also of sharing your surplus,
Exactly,
which is
yeah.
a permaculture idea. So you've got these conversations always end up spiritual too. A lot, I'm noticing that a lot too. There's a real connection between people recognizing that they're spiritually better off. I mean, that's an ancient idea too, that the poverty
I
is.
think it's, yeah, I think it's just about being more loving. Human beings are, I always thought that I'm lucky. I've had a fairly non-traumatic upbringing, and unlike a lot of people from my generation, I had a very quite a happy upbringing. So I came to so I've been in the world for 56 years thinking that people are good. People are inherently good and generous and kind. And then choosing to live without money has only brought that home even more. People are so generous generally, and good and kind, and want to help, help too much sometimes. I've had to turn down many offers of money.
Oh, right.
And I've had turned down an offer of a car and, places to live. And so I think that human beings are just generally good and kind and loving. And it's our culture and our society and the global economic system, capitalism, I don't know, patriarchy, whatever it is, has kind of squashed that to a certain extent and taught us and tried to teach us that that's not who we are, that we're actually naturally competitive and that we just want to hurt other people. That's not true. When you talk about the spiritual angle to all of this, I believe that people are generally loving and want to be loving.
And generally cooperative, otherwise we wouldn't be
Yes.
functioning at all. We wouldn't have. And
Exactly.
I think capitalism's based on scarcity, right? And I think as soon as you
Yes.
put the idea of scarcity into someone's mind, they just get fearful, and then all the
Yes.
negative stuff, and competitive and hoardy and
Yeah. And the
everything.
more fearful we are, the more we'll buy and try and hoard things for ourselves and
Yeah.
just look after our family and yeah.
Disasters like flood, fire, and extreme heat can have a significant impact on people's lives. Community legal centres help people experiencing challenges posed by climate change and disasters to access the resources and support they need. Disasters can lead to a range of problems, such as damage to your home, poor conditions with your rental home, difficulty getting insurance, issues within families, at work, and with Centrelink payments. Community legal centres can be found across Victoria and can provide help if you've been affected by a disaster. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres website at fclc.org.au. You can also contact Disaster Legal Help Victoria on 1800 113 432 and go to its website for helpful information at disasterlegalhelp.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
This is the
That's
Local
right.
Food Connection show on 3CR 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. Today I'm chatting with Joe Nemeth about living without money. Joe, so you've told us all the whys, and I bet we all get it. Can you tell us the how now? Tell us the story of what you did initially and take us up to where you are now with this existence.
Okay, well, yeah. So when I first decided to live without money, 2014, I thought it took me a year to kind of plan. The first thing I did was try and work out where to live. Well, no, the first thing that I did was I made a list of what I would actually need to be able to survive. And I wanted to do more than survive. I wanted to thrive. So I wasn't going to be making myself destitute. So I thought I need a place to live. So I went up the road to some people that I knew who had a big farm and they had a lot on. They had small kids, they had careers. They had this big farm to manage and they had a market garden. They were food growers. So I
Whereabouts was
went to
this?
them and I said,
Whereabouts was this, Joe?
this is just outside of Lismore, between Lismore and Nimbin in
Yep.
northern New South Wales. And so, I went to them and I said, look, I've got this crazy idea. And boy, it was nerve-wracking to have that conversation because I hadn't told many people and it was a very strange thing to say. And I said, oh, look, I've got this crazy idea. I'd like to try living without money, but I need somewhere to live. Can I live here and help you guys out? Do you need a hand? And they immediately said yes. They were very receptive. And so I set up there for the first year and a half. We had an agreed time, and I helped them grow food. I grew a little bit of food in my little space as well, which I didn't need to do in the end. I took my chooks there and, I just lived on food from there, from the garden, and waste food from people. And I went and helped a friend of mine at a cafe nearby, and she gave me bits of food. And I kind of managed to get quite fit and healthy in that year and a half there because I was also hitching and walking up and down this very big hill and very busy, active. And so then after the year and a half, I had to look for somewhere else and I went to a friend's house in Byron Bay, which was lovely, for 3 months while they were overseas. And then I went and stayed with my daughter in Lismore for a little while because I had to work out how I wanted to move into town. I felt like I was too disconnected. I wanted to be more used to my community and more engaged in my community. So I wanted to be in town. And I'm not a town person, so it was a big decision to move into town. So I decided that I wanted to do that. So I stayed with my daughter for just a few weeks. She was getting married, so I helped with all of that as well at the same time. And in that time, I managed to work out a place to live in North Lismore. I had a little tiny house that my parents had built for a friend of mine, and she wasn't using it. So we brought that into town, and I lived in that in my friend's backyard for a little while until the floods came and I had to move it. I moved to another friend's backyard, but it was flood prone, so I had to get out of there as well. Anyway, so I was only in that tiny house for probably, actually, it was probably a year and a half all up. Off and on. In that time, my best friend Sharon, who I currently live with, her husband was killed tragically and very suddenly. And one of the main benefits of living this way was that I had time. I was time rich, asset money poor, but time rich, which is a very special thing to be in our culture. And so I was able to move in with Sharon in her house in town just temporarily, and I was able to feed her and feed the children. She had two teenage boys, and I was able to feed them and keep them going while they went through this incredible time of grief, and loss, and it was awful. And so they kind of got back on their feet, and I moved out again, and then Sharon moved into this house that I'm currently in, and my daughter moved in here because Sharon and my daughter had my Sharon had known my daughter since she was a baby virtually, and I her kids, we've known each other for a long time. So Sharon moved into this house, and Amy moved in, and I used to come and visit, and we just got talking, and Sharon and I decided that I could move in here and I could grow food in her yard because she had this nice yard, but she did, and she wanted to have food here, but she didn't want to do the growing of the food. It's not her cup of tea. So we made this loose, very loose arrangement. Sorry, there's a garbage truck going past right now. It's very noisy. So we made this very loose arrangement, and that's the gift economy. There was no transaction. There was no, you have to do this many hours work and
Oh,
you have to do
yeah.
that. There was none of that. It was just friends making this kind of friends just talking and saying, look, I'd love to have you here, Joe, so that you can grow some food here. And I was saying, yeah, I'd love to be here because I come and hang out with my best friend and my daughter all the time anyway. So yeah, I moved into the back shed. I built a little loft because there was no room in the house, and it started from there, and I've stayed since then. And
So
since
this
then,
is like back just at about 2016 or something.
yeah, I moved
Yeah.
in. Well, Monty died in 2016. Sharon bought this house in 2018. I moved in here in 2019. Yeah. So from 2015, when I started living without money, till about 2019, I was kind of doing other things, and then I moved in here. Since I've moved in here, I've managed to branch out into the community more, which is what I wanted to do anyway. And I do a lot of work at the community garden here, which is just going gangbusters. I'm loving it so much. And just trying to get into growing more of the appropriate foods for here, subtropical perennial type things, and get them into the community, into people's backyards. Because when the trucks stop coming, which we have experienced here in 2022 with two massive floods one after another, you can't rely on supermarkets. We rely so heavily on them, and it's dangerous. So yeah, I'm very, very concerned about that, and I'm really keen to push these kind of easy to grow, easy to maintain things that will feed us when we need them.
Tell me, is there anything more you learned from the floods? Did that how did that chime with your understanding of humanity as essentially good?
Well, yeah, I mean, anybody who's, and a lot of Australians now have been touched by or involved in, big
Disasters.
disasters. They're happening more and more. The floods here were huge, phenomenally huge. Like, you just have no idea unless you were here. They were climate fueled, in 2 meters higher than the previous high flood. You'd expect that a flood that's higher than the previous high flood might be 2 or 3 centimeters. This was 2 meters. So it devastated the community. But I guess, as I was going to say, like, people who've been involved in this kind of climate, these kind of disasters, will know that the community pulls together. Like, it's amazing to watch the community, and it happened here in 2017 as well. So there was already kind of these kind of groups that were started after the massive floods in 2017 that kicked in and were on hit the ground running. A lot of people had to be rescued from houses, and they were rescued not by the SES, or the SES was involved, but most of the rescues happened with friends and family coming in boats to rescue people. And the community fed, like, we were fed, we weren't, because we were not directly flood affected. We tried to feed other people, but there were kitchens, just ad hoc kitchens set up in a few places throughout Lismore, and they fed rescuers and homeless, people who were become homeless. And it, you know, it's incredible to see, and it is really heartening, even through tragedy, that humanity, again, people are good.
And it
Good.
doesn't take long, does it? People mobilize really quickly, you know? So
Incredibly. Yeah, they're
sometimes in a disaster, people are mobilized as soon as they hear about it. And then the people in the middle of the thing have to say, can you stop sending clothes?
Yeah.
Or we can't manage
Well,
all this, whatever.
exactly. Yeah. I mean, but that was the, I think, because we had had the 2017 disaster here, that we already had teams ready to go as well. You know, they were they mobilized even faster because they were already ready, prepared. And so preparation is pretty important.
Joe, we're running out of time, or just we've got about 1 minute.
Okay.
We didn't even, I mean, we covered a lot, but we didn't get into the much more detail. It's been wonderful, and there's been so much for people to go away and think about. And you made it sound so doable, easy, obvious almost. You know, the way you just turned up and said, can I help on your farm? Yeah, of course you can. You know, everyone who's got a farm needs help, or you know, can with your
Yeah,
friend, she
and
wants her garden done. Oh, you can do the garden. I mean,
Annabel Crabb wrote a book, and in that book she says every woman needs a wife. I've
true.
come across that so many times. I've had so many people, including, I think it was Miff Warhurst, interviewed me on the radio once and said, "Oh, you can come and live with me. Come and live with me and do these things for me."
Yeah,
Because, you know,
that's
having
right.
someone in the house who can do the things that need doing to reduce the actual resource use and consumption of the household is really vital. And we're,
And that's
you
a
know, that used
traditional thing that
it
wives used
used
to
it
do.
used to be a thing, but that was different to what I'm doing, because that was in a situation where women didn't really have much of a choice.
There's a patriarchal
Yeah, exactly.
situation,
Whereas
so.
I'm doing this through complete free choice, and I'm doing it because I love it. There's no pressure on me to do this at all. So yeah, that's much vastly different, I think.
Oh, it's worth pointing out too that we're not saying to someone who's in dire poverty, you've got no money, lucky you. That's
No,
not,
God, no.
what we're saying at all.
No,
The
no, no. Like,
voluntariness
exactly.
of
Like, the
it's
fact that I
crucial.
choose this, and this, that I could make different decisions, means that I'm coming from a position of privilege, of quite a lot of privilege, and I acknowledge that. Yeah, it's not something that I expect other people to do. And I certainly, you know, when I'm talking to people about living with less, I'm not talking to people who are struggling to make ends meet. I'm
No, that's
talking
right.
to you know, people around me who have disposable income, who have more than they need. Yeah.
Joe, thanks so much for coming on. It's been a
No
pleasure.
worries, Anne. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Local Food Connections on 3CR, and today we've been speaking with Joe Nemeth. You have got a lot of Instagram stuff and
Oh, yeah, look, I'm on social media, Joe Low Impact. Yeah.
Joe Low Impact. So you can go on there and follow Joe and see what is up there. Joe Low Impact. And that'll get you to Instagram and
Facebook.
it's, yeah.
Yeah, and I know it's ironic because Instagram and Facebook and social media are really quite bad, and that's part of the part that's something I have to get
Yeah.
off of.
Oh, yeah. It's, everything's tricky.
Yep.
Using a phone is highly tricky. Okay, we'll just live with all the imperfection as we try and do our best.
Yes.
Until next week, love the land you're on. Share your surplus and take care of each other. Remember, if you want to support independent media, can support our current radiothon, which is just about underway. If you would like to donate to Local Food Connections, unlike Joe, 3CR does actually need money to keep going, but it's still part of the gift economy because we're asking you to give the gift to 3CR of some of your surplus money. If you can do that through Local Food Connections, that's fantastic for us too because it gives Local Food Connections some affirmation and lets us know we're on the right track and that people are interested in listening. So we're also celebrating 50 years of broadcasting at 3CR, so it's a celebration year, and we'd be very grateful if your donations were part of that celebration. 3CR's got voices separate from corporate and government interests. That's another reason to donate. Another reason to donate is it's tax deductible, so you can claim it back on your tax. So you can see it as a way of channeling your tax money in the right direction, not into submarines or armaments. So, if you do want to donate to Local Food Connections, go to givenow.com.au/ givenow.com.au/cr/localfoodconnections. I'll say that again. So it's givenow.com.au/cr/localfoodconnections. You can also do it in the normal way of like walking into the station, 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy, or you can go to our website, go to the 3CR website and you'll be directed in the right direction. The other one is by phone. And certainly when we have our radiothon show, or you can phone in before that, of course, and the number to call if you did want to donate by a phone, 94198377. Thank you for all the donations you made last year, and I look forward to meeting our target of $1,300 this year. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more Radical Radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.